Views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
For the next 60 minutes, be prepared to listen to some unsettling and rather scary conversation. We all live in a world of light, but now you are entering a darker zone. Welcome to the Rev and Witch Show. Listener discretion is advised.
And welcome everybody to the Reverend Witch Show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's been, well, a few lifetimes since I've been back on Para-X, and it's always great to be here. It's where I cut a lot of my teeth, and we really have built up some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people and some great friends. Now, along with me, oh, by the way, just in case you, my friends don't know who the hell I am the Reverend Tim Shaw, and with me is the vivacious, effervescent, and iridescent little sister of mine, Marla Brooks. Hello, Marla!
Hi, I'm still laughing. just in case somebody doesn't know who you are. Yeah, okay. Most people know you without even knowing you, but that's good. I'm glad.
That usually means that I owe them money. That's all there is to it. But, you know, Marla, I mean, you know, what a strange journey we've had. We've, you know, really gone the full gambit and well, you know, I went and I hung on my little sister's shirt tails for so long, and then you just kind of shook me off, and off into the real world I went. And
you
wow,
went running into the real world. Yeah,
yeah, well, yeah. These things happen, but you know, we have an interesting show tonight, and a lot of people know me as a spiritualist minister and a medium and all that, but I've really delved so much into so many different traditions and religions and especially the craft. And I was blessed to be able to meet some really great people like yourself who, well, you know, let's face it, Marla, you were a witch before you were, what, 2 years old, 3 years old?
Probably came out of the womb. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. 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 I always remember as a kid, you always I always used to call you a witch, but that's neither here nor there.
Your pronunciation was different then.
Yeah, well, it was a, you know, it was a soft W then. But with that, we digress. But what I really appreciated about what you did was the fact that you took a very interesting path. You were able to go and know exactly what you wanted to follow early on, where I myself followed the, you know, followed the path of my ancestors, and I actually, you know, and really got involved with the spiritualist churches and the religion and the spirituality of it. But yet somehow the two of our paths just connected along the way. And I feel that that's like something that was like predestined.
That was something like past lives, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure, but I don't want to hear about your past life as a hoochie coochie girl and my past life as a sideshow barker. But we'll talk about that in another another.
That's a whole other show, but it might be pretty interesting, actually. Yeah.
Well, I think we've really got probably one of the most interesting shows that we are going to be able to go and bring out. This is something that, well, you know, you remember the days when I used to go and I used to bring one of the most revered people, one of the most revered teachers that ever walked this earth. And I was fortunate enough to have actually met him, and I knew him, and you know, and we really kind of struck up like a friendship. And you also interviewed him. We're talking about the late great Raymond Buckland, right?
Yes, you had and you had me on a show with Ray at the same time. So that's
The old CBS show. That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, you go back a way bit farther. You go back to Lilydale with him and, you know, face to face, I'm just voice to voice, but still, well, what an honor.
I remember, listen, everybody, you know, Ray, I just want to let everybody know a little bit about Ray Buckland. Ray Buckland was a very humble person. He was very forceful. He was creative. He was an innovator. But he was very humble, and I met him on the porch of the old Maplewood Hotel, rocking on a summer's day, and we struck up a great conversation. And this little skinny, gray haired man, who was the most fascinating person that I had ever met in my life, started telling me about when he was a child during World War II and the Blitz and everything. And he got up and he walked away, and a guy walked up to me and said, "Do you know who you were just talking to?" And I, at that point, I didn't. He says, "That's Raymond Buckland." And I knew him through, of course, his reputation. And, of course, I had owned, at that time, many of his books. And he was just so nice. And he always remembered me. And that was something that always struck me as someone who is a true teacher. And one of those rare individuals that's kind of put on this earth to shake things up and create a wonderful atmosphere for those that were not part of the mainstream organizational religions. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful person, and I just can't say enough about him. But tonight we have a guest that I know personally, and, well, Marla, I'm going to let you do the introduction, and all I'm going to say is I admire this guest tonight. I admire him with all my heart and soul, because of the fact of what he's done and what he is continuing just to do. So, Marla, please introduce our guest tonight.
Okay, we've got Stephen Intermill here, and he is the curator of the Buckland Museum in Ohio, a lovely place that has a great history and has even more wonderful things in it that we're going to talk about tonight. So, Stephen, hello. Come on in.
Hi. It's showtime. How you doing?
There's a point that we do stop talking and let the guests come too. So just so you know. but, I mean, it, you know, when I saw that, I mean, I found you on Facebook and just went, you want to come on my show? You know, because I looked at the Facebook page and And again, with you know, knowing Ray Buckland very much on the fringe, and through Tim, I mean, I thought, wow, what a wonderful place. Now, the first thing I want to know, basically, is the history of the museum. I know it had a couple of different incarnations and in different places, right?
Yeah, it's had quite a few. It pretty much started out in Ray's basement back in the mid-60s. And the idea was he had trained under a witch named Monique Wilson, and she had inherited Gerald Gardner's Witchcraft Museum on the Isle of Man.
Nice.
And Ray went out there to visit with his wife, Rosemary, and they got trained. And the whole time Ray's thinking, you know, this would be a really wonderful way to train members of his coven. So he starts collecting artifacts on this trip on the Isle of Man. He comes home. He opens up a little museum in his basement. And it's super chill. Let's say that, you know, like Tim goes to visit his cousin in Long Island, and his cousin says, hey, Mom, tell you, I'm a witch now. And the people that run the coven have this great museum in the basement. Let's go check it out so you know that, you know, I'm really up to positive things. So you go over there, learn a bit about witchcraft, but then something happens. When we first opened here in Cleveland a couple years ago, Ray was still alive. And I said to him at the end of the night, because we had about 300 visitors that night. And I said,
wow.
Did you have this kind of reaction when you opened your place in Long Island? And he looks at me, and Tim will tell you, he was a bit hammy, but he had a bit dry of a sense of humor. And he looked at me and he goes, well, Stephen, many people enjoyed it. But then shortly after, someone set my car on fire.
Yep.
So he opens a museum down the street in Bayshore, Long Island, opens it to the public. And whenever I think about Raymond Buckland, I think about this brave man. Because, like, I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but if somebody set my car on fire, I'd probably be like, all right, I'm done. But Ray took it as you know what, I'm going to open this to the public. People understand that what we're doing is very positive stuff. And, you know, I just, every day, I think about that every day, and I just really applaud him for it. So that's the really the first incarnation of the museum. It moved around a bit. And now it's here in Cleveland, Ohio.
And how did you get involved in the sense of being the curator and putting things together and doing all that?
Well, you know, there's a part in my tour where I always tell people that, you know, if you have a weird idea, just pursue it because, you know, send that email. You never know what's going to happen. Because I was just kind of bored at my day job one day. I worked for a museum dedicated to a film that was produced here in Cleveland, dedicated to a movie. I'll just say, I was the curator of a Christmas Story house, and I was doing the marketing stuff there, and I was just kind of bored one day. I was like, during my lunch hour, I thought, what would be funner? And I thought about it, and I remembered Raymond Buckland's Witchcraft Museum. I emailed him, whatever happened in your collection. He forwarded it to my partner in this, Tony. She lives down in Columbus. She calls me up. She's like, hey, Stephen, what are you doing Saturday? Come on, check out the museum. It's all in totes, but come on down. I went down there, and, you know, about a year after that, we opened. So
that's amazing.
That, you know, you just in the beginning was the word, right? You put it out there, the first spell.
Exactly. And, you know, Steve, what I really was amazed at was I had thought that Ray had either sold off the collection or it was lost somehow. And all of a sudden, one day, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm looking through the internet and I see the Ray Buckland Museum is opening. And I'm going, it can't be.
And it's only a couple hours away from you, right?
Oh, well, that's even, listen, that's the best 3 hours that I get a chance to, go to. And on top of it, you have a great Ethiopian restaurant across the street from you. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation. But I had always, you know, over the years, I never asked Ray about the collection. He talked about various things that he used to have in his collection or he had in his collection. But I never thought that it would ever see the light of day again. And, you know, when you go and the first day when at the old museum and I walked through that door, Steve, I'm going to just come right out and tell you, it took my breath away. It took my breath away. And I have never seen a collection of magical artifacts and relics in one spot ever in my entire life. And I'm talking about wandering the streets aimlessly in New Orleans and all the, you know, even, well, Salem is very commercialized, more so than New Orleans. But, I've never been able to see so much in one space. It still to this day it takes my breath away. But I think what I love about your museum more than anything else is that it is done with such class. Just like Ray was a class guy. He was funny, but he was a class guy. And what you have done, I don't know really about your background, but you've got a certain eye for display and how to tell a story. And your museum not only tells the story, but also accomplishes a great, great goal. And that goal is to show people that there are traditions out there. This is just not evil. This is not only dark. This is what it all is. This is exactly what the craft is about. And your eye is impeccable, Steve. Impeccable.
Well, I would argue that my eye is pretty good, but I do have a partner with my wife, Jillian, and our partner, Tony. And they're always on top of everything. And I really love that it's a collaborative effort because in the end, it's every idea that they put forward is always better than mine. And I'm always just like, all right, well, it's fantastic. Let's move ahead.
I love it. I love it.
Okay. My question, Tim, is how did you wander in there? And I mean, was it curiosity? Did somebody that you know point you in that direction? Or how did you
Let me talk for a second.
Okay. Yeah, because the fact that they've let him into Ohio itself is kind of, you know.
I was sitting there one day, and I was in excruciating pain. I actually thought I had kidney stones, but it turns out I had shingles. Mm. And this guy came in. He just wanders in, just a really intense ball of energy. He's just talking at me. And I just, at some point, I said, hey, man, I'm really sorry. I think I have kidney stones. And he was just like, ah. Oh. And it was like this healing warmth of, like, positivity that, like, waved over me because he actually had kidney stones before himself. And that was awesome. I'm not really sure how you found me, how you came there, all that stuff. But all I know is that was a really, really great moment in this whole story because I was just like, somebody understands what I'm going through right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, and on top of it, Steve, I've had shingles too. So, it's one of those things. And I thank you for that. That's probably one of the greatest compliments that I've ever received. But you know how I found it, Marla? I was looking for unusual places. And we were filming Curiosity at the time. And I wanted to go out and do some field work and see what was out there in the world. So one day I was just kind of Googling, different little places. And I love museums. You know how I am with history. And museums just fascinate me. And I saw a review for it, I think, in one of the Cleveland papers. And automatically I saw Ray Buckland's name on there. And I was just like, oh, my God, you know, I need to get down there. And the museum had been open for a while, and Ray had attended the grand opening, but he had passed away, and I just knew that my respect and my love for that man, I had to go down there and pay homage. And I loaded my wife Nancy and my dog at the time Ebony, we went for a ride. And sure enough, Steve was more than welcoming. But when I walked into that place, you could just feel the energy. Everything that Ray had was that heat that was on display just hit you like all I can explain to you is it was like walking through a wall of static electricity. And I won't lie about that. That's how just intense it was. And Steve, tell everybody just some of the artifacts that you have, because what you had in the first museum was just a little drop in the bucket of what you have now.
Well, you know what? From the beginning, I have to say that our most important artifact would be Rosemary Buckland, Lady Rowan, the first American Wiccan high priestess's ritual headdress.
Yes.
And that's on display, and that's in one of the first cases. And whatever people say, like, what do you feel is most important? I feel that's it, because this is at the beginning of Wicca, you know, modern witchcraft in America. This is the headdress that was worn by the Grand Poobah, you know, to talk about it like in Fred Flintstone style. This is like the top of the pyramid, and you can still feel like you can really honestly, when you look at it, you can feel the Gnostic vibes just
yes.
throwing off of it. A lot of people, I point out to them, Raymond Buckland's ritual horned helmet, which he made out of mixing bowl, and it's
yes, he did. I remember him telling me about that.
It's my absolute favorite part of the whole thing, because to me, it's like the greatest teaching piece in the collection, because this is the thing that explains to you, you know, there's a reason why there's the word craft in witchcraft, and you have to put a piece of yourself into this. And it's not just, you know, you go down to wherever, buy this. You go down to Sears, Robux, you know, and you get yourself your horned helmet. You're the head of the group. It's not like that. You actually have to work on this yourself. And I love that so much. We have probably my favorite piece would be the besom from the Isle of Man.
Yes.
So it's a broom. It hangs right above us. People don't notice it usually until I point it out. And it just has such a long history that includes Ripley's Believe It or Not that, you know, I'm just a humble tourist destination here in Cleveland. So having a piece that once like was part of the Ripley's collection, it's just real fun for me.
Well, never cut yourself.
Lots of sorry. That.
I'm sorry, Marla. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say that we're talking about Ray and everything, but I think some people might not know his contribution to bringing Wicca from England, from Gerald Gardner, and introducing Wicca in the United States. And that was like a really big claim to fame. There was no Wicca before he came.
Yeah, there wasn't. There may have been like somebody here and there, but he really was the first. And, you know, he came over and he's just, it's pretty much like anybody else's story where, you know, he just starts seeking one day and he discovers Wicca, starts a correspondence with Gerald Gardner. Next thing you know, he's the point guy in the U.S., and, you know, anybody else, I'm not sure if Wicca would have really had taken off like it had here if it wasn't for Ray, because he was such a genius and such a, you know, he really understood the importance of certain things.
And he laid the groundwork, and beyond that, because, I mean, there are many different types of Wicca, but he also created CX Wicca.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, he's the guy that we all kind of used to bow down to, you know, not necessarily figuratively, but I mean, literally, but figuratively.
Literally, I have bowed down to
Ray Buckland. Yeah, I bet.
I am not going to lie to you, because when I got to, you know, get a chance to see him down in Lilydale, the spiritualist enclave in here in Western New York, when he used to come in to teach, literally, I would bow my head when I saw him and I talked to him. And, you know, he was just that wonderful person. And I respected him so much, so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steve, I wanted to ask about the robe. Now, that robe, that ceremonial robe of Ray's that you guys have on display is pretty neat because, well, you can tell the story of how it had a little crossover into modern media.
Yeah, you know, like the first thing that we have on display is Raymond Buckland's ritual robe. It's, you know it if you know Big Blue. It's a, you know, there's a very famous photo of him wearing it. And it's the first thing that you see when you walk into the museum. It's, I have to thank Tony for that because, you know, how you were saying earlier about, like, my eye and stuff. Tony was just like, Steve, you got to put this right here. This is what people have to see when they walk in. And she was absolutely right because, you know, it's so regal. It's purple. It's so intense. And I always love, I pull out this photo of Raymond Buckland wearing it in the early 80s, looking super rad. But then there's another photo that's right next to it, and it is a still from the movie The Love Witch by Anna Biller. And Anna Biller is an incredible filmmaker, and she made this movie. It's the last movie that was ever filmed in Technicolor, so it has that vibrancy, that beauty to it. And, yeah, the guy wearing the robe, he looks a lot like Raymond Buckland. Or the guy in the photo, he's wearing a purple robe just like Ray's. He looks a lot like him. And I would have to say that they really were, you know, really paying attention to the look, the feel, the style of what they were trying to evoke. Julian and I were at the Cleveland Cinematheque, the great art film theater here in Cleveland, and we're watching the movie The Love Witch, Anna Biller, and that robe comes up, and I made some kind of weird noise, and Julian was like, yeah, totally, we have the robe that one's based on in our guest room closet right now. And it was really fantastic, because this was like the sign that we really needed to go forward. This does resonate with our culture today.
Now, let me ask you this. When you started to go forward on this project, how was the support? Now, I know Cleveland is a lot like my area. There's a great, there's a fantastic push for art and for museums and for traditions and saving these things. But then again, you have some people that may be a little bit, well, we don't want this in our community. How was it when you decided to put this project forward and actually establish a museum? Did you get a lot of support or was there a little resistance?
You know, I'm the type of person, I like to focus on the good. Most people, you know, like we told a couple of our friends right away, hey, we got this opportunity. They're just like, yeah, and what's the question? What's going on? So that was good validation. You awesome. Know, we get some slack. You know, some people, yeah, you know, we're not so down with the witches, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you know, focus on the good, right?
Right. And that's the best way to do it.
I think my absolute favorite part of all this is when we opened, my dad was at the opening. And he says, yeah, did you know that one of your cousins married Mary Webster and known as Half Hung Mary in Salem? And they tried to hang her a couple times. She wouldn't die. And I was like, okay, Dad, why did you never mention this before? And he was like, yeah, you know, you never owned a witchcraft museum before. Never really came up. My mom, she shows up at the opening. She's got a bottle of wine. She's just like, yeah, okay, it's going to be Jillian, my wife. This guy, Ray, I keep talking about. Tony keeps talking about. And then, you know, my mom and dad, they got some wine. It's just going to be like, hey, cool, awesome, have fun, peace. And there's about 300 people there. It takes her about an hour to get in. And she's walking around just dumbfounded. Wait, this is real. She saw Sybil Leek's crystal ball.
And oh, my God, yes.
Yelled it for her. That's where she was like, oh, there's a reason why this. Okay. And so that was fun.
What was Ray's reaction? Because I know, you know, when you guys are putting this all together, what was Ray's reaction to the idea of the continuance of his collection in a museum?
I think he really loved it, but you know, he was kind. He was a very kind guy, but he was also really cool. You know, he was like, "Yeah, cool." I have a photo of him where he's got a big grin at the opening. You know, I think we're doing him proud that his legacy was continuing in such a way.
You are. You definitely are.
You know. The thing that cracked me up more about Ray than anything else was when he started doing stand-up and posting it on Facebook.
Isn't that the best?
Here is somebody that everybody is kneeling to and praying to, and we're so revered, and then we look on Facebook, and he's doing a really good job of stand-up comedy.
Just like clubs, some hammy jokes, you know?
Yeah.
His best friend was a guy named Bill Martino. And Bill showed up probably about a couple weeks before we reopened. And he was like, hey, you know, I kind of wanted to give you this this puppet. It's Harry. And I guess Ray had given it to him. And he looks like a Muppet. And it's Harry. He's, his dummy. And I was just like, all right, cool. I guess he was kind of weirding out the people and stuff. But people always ask about it. And I'm like, I don't know. Ray was a showman.
He was. He was. Steven, what about you have a pretty neat collection of artifacts from Aleister Crowley, which I didn't, you know, I don't know if I missed it the first time, you know, when the museum was smaller or not. I probably did. That is amazing to be able to have something like that. Those are not just witchcraft traditional pieces. Those are historic pieces. What are people's responses, reactions when they see that in that beautiful display? That display is gorgeous.
So my understanding is Ray got those through Israel Ricarte, and you know, there's all sorts of stuff about when it comes to Crowley and the history of Wicca. Ray seems to have had a great appreciation of the beast himself, but it's funny because one thing I always point out on the tour is, you know, when you're nicknaming your children, probably be careful because, you know, his mom, this evangelical, she's like, hey, my son's the beast of Revelation, so, you know, be careful. They may grow up to be like that. I really love the Crowley pieces so much. They're really intense. They have a lot of energy to them. But we have a recent edition that I kind of love even more. When I was about 20 years old, I was obsessed with a guy named Kenneth Grant, who was one of Crowley's students. And I wrote him some pretty whacked out letters, I'm sure. And I never heard back from him. Then about 4 months after we opened, this guy Dennis shows up. And he's like, hey, you know, it's my 60th birthday. I wanted to do something special today. So Dennis, he donates a letter from Kenneth Grant to the collection. And I'm like, oh, man, it took 25 years, but I got my Kenneth Grant letter. It's like earth-shattering, you know?
That's so awesome.
A couple months after that, a witch named Nima from Southern Ohio shows up. And Nima donates a sketchbook. And she's this notorious witch from Southern Ohio, ceremonial magician. Really beautiful. Some of the most incredible artwork I've ever seen in my life. And there she is in our museum donating this sketchbook to the collection. And, you know, it's all part of the same current. But, you know, changes, goes down like different tributaries, you know, and yeah, so you know, I love the crowy stuff. That stuff's gorgeous, but I like the other stuff too. And this is my advice to young people, because I had a boss I really liked at the time, but it was his birthday, not like a significant one, like maybe 39th birthday or something. And we were going out to dinner, and Nemo wanted to go to dinner with us. And I'm like, yeah, I got to go to dinner with my boss. So I give this advice to the youth that come in, you know, go to dinner with a witch, you know, you never know.
Exactly.
Nemo passed away a few months later. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. something you always think about.
Well, we're going to give people time to think, because we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Power Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction. We are ready to scare you.
ParaX.
From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And we're back. And Marla, this is this hour is just way too short for someone of Steve's caliber. But Steve, I want to talk a little bit about, and people, I know, it was so cute, Marla, when I was at the museum last. There was this kid that had 1,001 questions, and it was great because he came in with his father, and his dad is always looking for like new museums to expose him to. So he comes in, and it was pretty busy that day when I was there, and he latched onto me, and I think I made a new friend that day.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I always thank you for that, because sometimes it's, you know, I think my favorite days are days like today. It's a Thursday afternoon. People were coming in constantly, but slowly I could sit there and I talk to them. On Saturdays, sometimes it's super overwhelming. And it was really, really wonderful to have an expert like you where I could be like, Tim, kid. Tim, go.
He was so cool because he had, you know, for, I don't know, probably what, he's about 9 or 10 years old.
No,
Marla, this kid, man, this kid had 1,001 good questions. Yeah. There were a couple times that I had to stop and think about what I was going to tell him.
Yeah, good questions. And that was, I think about that stuff a lot where I'm just like, all right, there we go. Tim's here. It's showtime. Yeah, his I love questions. I love kids like that, because when you have people that kind of test your knowledge, that's how you grow. And
Exactly. And Ray would be the first one that would take the time and talk to children, because I remember saying to me that, you know, not to sound corny, but children are the future of the craft, because they're the ones that will carry on the traditions long after we're gone.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say that Ray was 100% right. Now, I want to ask you about something in the museum that I know is, I won't say it's controversial, but it's got a major creep factor. And I've talked to some people that have come down to the museum, and they've gotten, you know, they're clairsentients, and they got some creepiness off it. And Marla, you'd love this thing. It's a little Divic box. And Steve, tell everybody about this, because I have to say that even I was like, and I've seen a few of them in my time, but this one just seems special because, of course, you know, well, you can tell the story about it.
All right. Well, so in 1970, a friend of Ray's, a guy named Tom, a ceremonial magician of some renown, he calls up Ray. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing on Saturday? Want to drink some beer, watch the game?" And Ray was a very sociable person. And he's like, "Yeah, sure, cool." This guy lives in the Lower East Side, so Ray goes down there. I like to always think that it was the building that the cover of Physical Graffiti, the Led Zeppelin record, but probably not. He goes down there, goes to this guy's apartment, and his friend closes the door, and he's like, "Yeah, so there's another reason why I asked you here. I conjured something, and I can't get rid of it, okay?" And Ray, you know, smart guy, he's like, "Yeah, not my demon, not my problem. Sorry, peace." And his friend's like, "No, come on, seriously, I need your help." And you knew Ray, you know that, I mean, he wasn't, you know, like I always say about Ray is like, I would email him like a press release and be like, "What do you think?" And I'd get an email right away being like, "I don't really have time to look at it. I'll email something back later tonight." But then about 20 minutes later, the whole thing would be rearranged, you know.
That was right.
New thing. So, you know, this guy, he's like, "I really need your help." And Ray, of course, being the gentleman, was like, "All right, fine." So he goes home. He gets this book, the Red Dragon book, actually, and he gets to work. He said it took about 3 days. As soon as they got this entity inside the box, they could all feel it. He seals it with incantations and, you know, some framing wires so the lid doesn't just pop off. He goes home, puts it on his shelf as a trophy. Now, I was just like, "Okay, cool, Ray. Demon in a box." But all this, like, weird stuff happens around it. That makes me extraordinarily uncomfortable with it. I actually, you know, we often talk about, like, let's not even have it on display, but we know we have to because, well, it's, it always has to be on site, you know. You have to be able to see it to know somebody hasn't walked away with it. It's trouble. So anyway, Ray captured this thing. Probably the strangest thing that happened was a Friday night. My wife Jillian had left the museum early. I'm sitting there. I'm left. Yeah, there it is. I'm sitting there. I'm just hanging out. This guy barges in. He's like, "Hey, man, I was driving down the street. This thing called out to me. Wants to be friends, man." He kind of checks me on the way, and I'm like, "Excuse me?" He goes to the case it's in. He's shaking it. He's trying to get in there. Decided to use primitive high school wrestling skills. I get him out the door, call up Jillian. I'm like, "Hey, Jill, you know that case that your coworker wants to sell us? The one with the special tools that you need to get into it? Yeah, why don't we buy that? Because that was weird." Also, all sorts of weird stuff happened around it. Psychics tend to faint around it.
Yes.
A couple weeks ago, this lady came in. She was standing by it. She didn't even look at it. Oh, this this was gross, actually. I had to clean it up, and we had a pretty full museum. This woman projectile vomits on herself.
No kidding.
And she said that she completely felt normal. So, yeah, team of the box, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, it's funny, Steve, museum. Because you know what my collection is. I have 7 trunks of quote-unquote crazy, haunted, unusual objects.
You love that stuff.
Oh, yeah, I am so into it. And it's like I keep waiting for someone to offer me a demon in a box, because when they do, I am definitely grabbing it. I'm taking it, but the only thing is I know my wife will not be happy with it. So you may be getting another demon in the box if I do get one. But that is it's an amazing piece because you can feel it. And Marla, something that I know that you would love is he has got an antique coffin. Not a casket, a coffin. Nice. What I always wanted to ask you about that, Steve. What happened? Where did you guys find that beautiful antique coffin?
I'm actually not allowed to say where it came from, but it's an Oddfellows coffin.
Okay, so you don't have to. Yeah, I understand.
So it's totally. It's showtime. It's a memento mori. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. I know because many of my friends have been past Grand Masons in the Masonic orders, and I do know a lot about the Oddfellows, the local Oddfellows, and their rituals, how skeletons and skulls and coffins play such an integral part of their rituals. Marla, it would be perfect for you. I think that you could make a nice new bed out of that.
That small, is it?
It is small. It is, because you're one step above midget, but that's another story.
So, are you really related?
Well, he's my brother from another mother, but not in this. Basically, yes. Not in this. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Basically, yes. Steve. We the two of us answer each other's sentences. That's why we're so related. Which
it
is crazy.
It goes back many lifetimes, I think.
I think so too.
It must. It must.
But no. Steve, go ahead. I'm sorry, Marla, please.
Well, no, ask a question, and then I want Steve to talk a little bit about things. He's got a really good guest coming to the museum next week.
Oh, my God, Steve, tell who's coming, because that is, if I didn't have to go out for filming, I would be there for this guest.
Mm-hmm. So next Wednesday, we are going to have the legendary Oberon Zell here, the mighty Oz. Very excited. I saw Oz on TV when I was a little kid, so now he's going to be in my museum. Really excited. I know he was always really tight with Ray. So,
yes.
He's been on my show a couple of times, and he's wonderful. He's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. I'm really, really excited for this. He's, he's like one of those legendaries, mm-hmm. like that I've been reading about for years. Now I get to host him here. So it's going to be Wednesday. The admission is just the admission to see the museum. Come in, hang out with, truly one of the great neo-pagans. He's probably going to be at the museum all day Wednesday, and then we're going to do our presentation at 7:30. And I don't know, how do you even hype people up for something like this? Because it's just so cool.
You stand back and let it happen, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing. But you've also, the one thing that I really appreciate what you're doing is that you have these wonderful classes. I am just amazed at it. How is the response? Do you guys really get a good group of people? Because I've been stalking I stalk your Facebook pages all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I got to tell you what, it's wonderful. I'm seeing a decent groups going in there. Looking and learning, and you got some heavy hitters. I have to admit that the people that come into that museum are amazing. Now, I got to ask you this one, Steve. People always ask me, do you think that there's anything paranormal or has any kind of spiritual activity at the museum? So I'm going to ask you right out, have you had, now we talked about the Divic box and all the craziness around that, but have you ever had anything that you would consider unusual or otherworldly happen at the museum?
One of my main things that I do every day, I come in and I do the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, which is a cleansing ritual, kind of calms everything down. But we do have an extraordinarily active black mirror, and it's Ray's black mirror. And, I've had some weird stuff happen with that. It usually... I have stopped, I used to have this thing where, say a mother and a daughter would come in and the daughter would just be bugging mom and mom would say, do you have an activity for her? And I'd say, yeah, kids, stare in that black mirror for a while.
I love it.
Some stuff is a learning thing, and I don't ask, I never, ever, ever suggest that any longer. So we have an extraordinarily active black mirror. That's cool. But other than that, Gerald Gardner's besom works as a pendulum, we found. And, the theory is that Ray uses it to communicate with us. And, I just kind of leave it at that.
That was going to be my next question. I was wondering if Ray has tried to go and just stop by and say hi. Because now I know Ray was, he was rough and, to kind of pin down sometimes, but he truly believed in otherworldly communications. And
yeah.
He taught me so much about it myself personally and increased my knowledge. Has he really come? Has he tried to come to the museum? I think he's probably come back to Tara a few times, but definitely, I was wondering if there was anything that might have been a little where you said, "Okay, Ray, I know it's you."
We had a séance here last summer. It was interesting because I talk about the broom, and it always would sway one way, but then when we were talking about Ray, it started rocking back and forth in a way nobody had ever seen it before, and I was paying attention to it. But I haven't really seen a lot of Ray, I haven't seen a lot of Ray activity lately, and to be honest, I think it was because in my heart I feel that Ray was such a developed soul that he was such a believer in reincarnation. And I think he's already back.
I agree. Truly agree, yeah.
That's just my pet theory. I don't want to... But knowing Ray, I think he... people bring their little babies in sometimes, and maybe Ray's been one of the little kids that have come in here already. I don't know.
Oh, my God. That would be like the Dalai Lama. That would be phenomenal. Oh, my...
I mean, he was that level,
Yeah, so. He was. He was beyond.
Definitely an evolved soul. Yeah. Now, before we run and totally out of time, let's talk about, you've got an exhibition coming up August 3rd through November 3rd, which is...
Oh, yeah. No, that's going to be a really wonderful experience. It's the William Mortensen Witches Collection. So... There's a photographer, his name was William Mortensen, and Ansel Adams referred to him as the Antichrist. And I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know right there. It's he was a person that believed in like glamour and some trick photography and the grotesque. And this guy, Stephen, Stephen Romano in New York, he's an occult art dealer. He hit me up one day. He was like, hey, I want to do something in your museum. And I was like, oh, cool. I didn't really have the space at the old location. But then I bought some prints from him last year. and it kind of rebuilt our friendship, our relationship. And he was just like, come on, when are we going to do this thing in your museum? Come on. And I was like, all right, what about these dates? And it's the William Mortensen witch photos. They're absolutely stunning. It's he's somewhere in the 20s. Like, we're going to have about 20-something photos in here. It's in our rotating exhibit space. And, I think my favorite thing about it is, like, local photography groups have called me up. And they're like, hey, so those Mortensen's photos, like, what? You just, like, found a bunch of high-res pictures on the internet? You're printing them out? I'm like, no, these are the real prints. They're like, how? How exactly is this happening? Magic, baby.
And also, I mean, we really are close now, but you've got something with Household Magic coming up. People can find
Patty Wiginton, one of the true greats of, like, I mean, she's going to be a legend one day. So.
And people can find out about all of this on your website. So let's direct people to where they can find everything about the museum.
Bucklandmuseum.org, as well as, you know, we have a Facebook page, the Sauron's Eye. Our Instagram, Buckland Museum. So it's we're easy to find out there. We're the only witchcraft museum in the Midwest at this point. Let's just keep it that way.
Well, I think you'll agree, Tim, we just barely scratched the surface tonight.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to let everybody know, seriously, if you have a keen interest in the craft, the history of the craft, the old ways, Ray Buckland himself, you want to see something unusual, please, guys, please hit this museum up. This museum is probably one of the most ambitious small museums that I have ever been at. And what I love about it, it is not exploitive of Ray's name or reputation. Yes, this is Ray's collection, but it's not like, hey, you know, Ray did this with this and Ray did that. No, it's there, and Steve takes the time to explain it to you, and you just walk around. I think I was in there this last time, probably 2.5 hours, and I looked at everything, and poor Steve had to run after me with Windex and paper towels because my nose was on every single case in his museum.
I believe that.
But really, guys, go see this museum. I can't recommend it highly enough.
You know, one thing I do want to point out, it's not a fun house. It's not like some kind of like wacky thing. Sometimes people come in, they're disappointed, they want to be like, oh, that was so scary. And, you know, there's other places for that. But this,
exactly.
Most of all, I see this as an outsider art museum because this is stuff that was created by people with a passion, people that, I guess that's
it's the real deal is what we're saying.
It's absolutely the real deal. For those in the craft, This should be a pilgrimage. I'm telling you right now, this should be a pilgrimage to anybody who's in the craft.
All right, Tim, we got to run. Take us out of here.
Well, guys, thank you everybody for listening in tonight. It's been an honor to come back and do the Reverend Witch Show with my lovely little sister, Marla, and our fantastic guest. Oh, my God, Steve, thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
And I'll be in touch soon myself. And everyone, always remember one thing, guys. Always remember one thing. It doesn't matter what people think about you. It doesn't matter what people say about you. It doesn't matter at all. The only thing that matters is if you stay true to yourself. Always remember that. Never back down. Never surrender. Because you're the only one that can keep you happy. So, until next time.
Blessed be, everybody.
And we should meet again.
Good night.
You have been listening to The Rev and Witch Show. Classic horror provided by Incomputech. Written and performed by Kevin MacLeod. Copyright 2017.